Blog Talk Radio.
Where are you?
Good morning and welcome to Circles of Prosperity. My name is Gloria, and we have Cynthia and Dr. Reggie on the line as well. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good this morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. Listen, Dr. Reggie, I'm trying to get Dr. Reggie here too, so we can go ahead and do our morning prayer very quickly. He's expecting a delivery, and we're waiting for those people to come, and I want to be able to mute the line so you guys don't hear all these boxes and everything.
Okay.
Okay. He is getting it together. So we are in the book study of Breaking Free from Critical Addiction.
Yes.
By Kaylee Marino, who is just absolutely fabulous. If you guys did not listen to Are You Miracle Ready? We did this show about 2 days ago. Please go back and download the archive of that show. It will really give you a sense of the journey that we're taking through critical addiction. And I know a lot of you are very accustomed to hearing us give you an inspirational word in the morning to carry you through. But right now what we're doing is that we're laying a foundation for you to understand these principles, and then Kaylee does a magnificent thing as you go through the book. She begins to show you how to use these spiritual principles in order to get rid of this inner critic. So we're asking for your patience, for you to hang in here with us, so that you have a clear understanding of some of the challenges that you may be up against in dealing with your inner critic. I mean, I've already discovered things about my personality, which are, you know, my inner critic. And I've had a couple of people to call me and say, oh, my God, Cynthia, I saw me in this. And, it's just fabulous. And, you know, the other thing, even if you don't recognize this, or you have overcome a lot of these challenges already, or you were already aware of the divine perfection of you, you come in contact with people who are struggling with some of these things. And Kaylee is giving you the tools to help minister and to people that are struggling with it, to help you identify what it is, number one, and number two, the things that you can use to help them. So, because remember, we're light workers first, are we not? Yes. So hold on. Dr. Reggie's delivery has come, so we're going to have to go ahead and do our opening prayer ourselves this morning. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for moving through Kaylee and inspiring her to give us such wonderful information to help make us aware. I won't use the word heal us, because there's nothing wrong with us. We just need to become aware of some of that inner critic, and to quiet that inner critic, and to live the fullness of the divine perfection within us. We thank you so much for Gloria for bringing this book to us, for her insight and ability to share this book with us, to lift us up and make us aware. And so it is. All righty. Let's get this party started, Gloria.
All right. So yesterday we left off we were talking about the symptoms, ways that we most commonly actually hide or silence the inner critic. So, Cynthia made a really good point at the beginning of the show today about whether or not all of these you know, you're finding all of these personality traits within your own character, you know, or whether you're dealing with someone who has a lot of these traits. Either way, this information should be useful to help you get, you know, bring some awareness to these traits. All right, so yesterday we ended off with denial and secrecy. It was the fourth one that we had talked about yesterday, and I just want to, we were about halfway through denial and secrecy when the show ended yesterday, and there was just one more paragraph under that that I wanted to share with you, and then we'll move on to anger. All right, so we can deny our problems and shortcomings and do everything possible to hide our mistakes from others. Denial moves perceived faults out of sight, giving us the appearance of peace, even if it's superficial or temporary. However, the problem with this solution is that we really do know what happened and what is going on. We cannot not know what we know, and this knowledge will eat us up deep inside and manifest in undesirable expressions, such as ill health and anger projected onto others. So there, I just wanted to include that under the denial and secrecy, that I thought that was a really important thing that we didn't really get to add to denial and secrecy yesterday. So we're going to move now into anger. And I'm actually going to read the entire portion that she wrote about anger, because I just really believe that anger is something that we all deal with on some level, whether it's our own anger or the anger of someone else, or just unacknowledged or unacknowledged anger. So I think that this is going to be an important one of the personalities. So I'll go ahead and read from the book what she said here, and then we'll unpack anger a little bit, okay? All right, so anger is another way to attempt to an escape from the inner critic. Just project the guilt on others as the case of our problems, as the cause of our problems, I'm sorry. We would be okay if other people would just do what they should do and quit messing us up. Does this sound familiar? We can wear anger as a punitive mask to make us feel strong when we feel weak, vulnerable, or guilty. Anger hides our vulnerable feelings of hurt, insecurity, shame, helplessness, or inadequacy caused by self-criticism and self-doubt. If you want to know the real source of your anger, ask yourself what you are afraid of or what hurts. Someone else may have hurt you, but the self-doubt that is caused is now the actual source of ongoing anger. It is now self-inflicted by the inner critic, feeding on your insecurity. When we can't deal with our vulnerable feelings, we try to blame others for our weakened condition. Attack thoughts fuel our fire as we lash out at whatever we perceive to be the blame, seeking to punish the offender. We may actually be angry with ourselves. If we have denied our own part in a perceived problem, we may project our blame onto others to protect ourselves from the wrath of our own inner judgment, which keeps us from feeling guilty. Wow, so I just want to stop at that paragraph before I finish the last two paragraphs in this section. She's talking here about we're projecting our own insecurities on other people. So it's really a covert way of hiding the inner critic. If what we feel, what she's saying here, is that we project that blame onto others to protect ourselves from the wrath of our own inner judgment. That makes me think about the ego a little bit. You know, you hear a lot of times that the ego is this bad thing. Like, you know, you don't want the ego running the show and things of that nature. I happen to think just a little bit differently about the ego. I think that the ego is our friend. It's there to protect us. Now, it can get out of hand. The same with anger. I'm comparing the ego to anger because I feel the same way about that, you know, in terms of we're trying to protect our own inner peace, our own inner we're trying to keep from internalizing our anger, so we lash out at others, okay? So, you know, I just think that's a really important thing to try to stress, is that it's really us trying to protect ourselves. So if you look at it like that, it's not something that you want to beat yourself up. You're literally trying to protect your own self and your own inner peace sometimes when we lash out. So I'm going to continue reading here. People frequently get a euphoric rush, an adrenaline high from their own anger. So can you begin to see why anger is so addictive? People actually get a rush from the anger or an adrenaline high from that anger, even though the chemicals produced by the anger are actually destructive to other nervous system and health. Anger has a negative effect on the body for up to 6 hours after we are no longer angry. Anger is not only abusive to others, but to ourselves as well. You can read more about the destructive effect of anger and other negative emotions at www.heartmath.org. Habitual anger is particularly dangerous symptom of an advanced stage of critical addiction that has consequences as serious as death itself. I believe that domestic violence and road rage are a result of critical addiction. Anger is used to discipline children and others by making them afraid to make us angry. If habitual anger was publicly recognized as an advanced form of critical addiction, addicts would receive treatment earlier, and the number of injuries and deaths due to domestic violence and road rage would decrease significantly. So there she's making a very, very, very valid point about the negative effects of anger. First of all, one amazing point that she made there, besides the fact that you're getting, we all get this euphoric rush or adrenaline high from the anger, which can make it very addictive. But the other thing was that it can last, the effects of anger can last in our body up to 6 hours after we're not even angry anymore. So you may have been angry about something an hour or 2 hours ago. Your body is still feeling the after effects, the chemicals that are released in the body when we become extremely angry, up to 6 hours after that anger subsides. So that is just an amazing fact, I think. And also, not only is it an amazing fact, it is a good motivation to get us away from that anger. You know, if we know that this is affecting our body for hours and hours after we've calmed down, then surely that's not something that we want to continue to indulge in for long periods of time, because we now know that stays within our body for a long time after we're no longer angry. So she's also talking here about it's an advanced, anger is actually an advanced stage of critical addiction. The consequences are extremely serious. And the other point I wanted to make about this section on anger is that it's used to keep other people from making us angry. So in other words, if I'm angry enough and I'm upset enough and I'm yelling loud enough, that will probably scare other people from messing with me or making me angrier, you know? So it's used as kind of like a fear tactic as well. There was one other part I wanted to comment on here on anger. She gave us that website to go to if you want to read more about anger and the other negative emotions. That website, again, was heartmath.org, H-E-A-R-T-M-A-T-H.org. So if you want to read more about anger, you can go to that website and find out some more information about that. Okay, so I think that's about it on anger. We're going to move now into what she's titled disease, because we'd like to finish up chapter one today, and we do have a couple of other points to make within this chapter, so we're going to move on to disease. She says here that more and more health practitioners are recognizing the impact that stressors such as anxiety and criticism have on disease. I have met doctors who believe negative thinking is the number one cause of disease. When we stuff or deny our negative emotions, the stressful energy has to go somewhere, so it is held in our bodies. This causes illness and all of the feelings of helplessness and insecurity that go along with poor health. It is well documented that there is an emotional component to all illnesses. So there again, she's going back to how these feelings and emotions actually play into our well-being as well. It doesn't seem that surprising now that we know that the effects of anger stay with us for up to 6 hours after we're angry. Those chemicals are moving around there, and they're staying within the body. They're not being released out into the world, well, other than, you know, our yelling or whatever, but they're chemicals that stay within the body long after these emotions subside. Okay? The next one that she talks about is depression. She says that we become depressed when we believe it is not okay to feel what we feel. We depress our anger and vulnerable feelings, believing that it is not okay for us to be angry or hurt. Depression is a mask woven out of apathetic feelings of not caring what happens in a disinterest in life. We tell ourselves that a situation in our life should be okay with us, and we really shouldn't be complaining about it. We may either think there is nothing we can do about the situation, or that we would lose something important to our security by complaining or doing something about it. Not caring feels safe than caring without being able to do anything about it. Depression or loss of emotion can become so strong that we are no longer motivated to struggle for survival. Life itself may seem like too much trouble, which can lead to suicidal thoughts and actions. All right, so there she's letting us know that how depression really acts for us, or, you know, what it does. The part that I want to touch on there is that she says that we believe that it's not okay to feel what we feel. So that is a form of, like, emotional intelligence, to be in touch with your feelings and to know literally who you are, you know?
Gloria,
before
we move forward,
mm-hmm.
you know, I suffered with depression very bad, to the point where I could not get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything stopped for me when I would have those bouts. I just crawl up in the bed and just sleep away my life. I did not want to face the struggle. I think I didn't see it as being emotionally intelligent at all. I mean, I wasn't making that connection at all. Not to say that you're wrong. I'm just saying I didn't make that connection. I basically did not have the energy or the strength to deal with whatever drama appeared in my life. And when I look back over it now, the dramas were nothing. But the pain was so overwhelming that you just give up. I mean, dying would have been better for me at that point than having to just continue to wake up in the morning and relive the experience. And here's the thing, most of it is in your mind.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so what corrected this for me and for me was when I recognized that I had control over those feelings. And when you are dealing with people, a lot of times they don't feel that they have control over their feelings, especially people in depression. They feel that they have absolutely no control. But Dr. Reggie was able to reach me and to reach me on a soul level. This is why I think he is so dynamic. He reached me on my soul and helped to bring the awareness of the innocence of that soul. The innocence, because that's our divine energy, correct? He brought, he made me aware of that, and the healing began for me there. And then he continued to minister to me about the subconscious mind and the power that the subconscious mind, he restored my power. When you're depressed, you feel powerless. Yeah. He restored my power, but he did it on a spiritual level. And from my personal experience, I really think that's the only way we heal. And I think as we continue to go through Kaylee's book here, that we're going to see that that healing begins with that. She says it so beautifully in her introduction. You are innocent. And I expand on that by saying there's this divine energy in you. There's nothing wrong with you. All of these things that she's showing right now is where we've been programmed to think that we are not perfect or that we are damaged goods. Yeah. And the symptoms that you're going through right now are really just revealing to us how we try to hide the truth of our innocence.
Yeah.
So I just think this is just an amazing journey. Let's go ahead and move into substance abuse.
Okay. So, and just one thing about that, what you were just saying there. She's saying that we depress our anger and vulnerable feelings, believing that it's not okay for us to be angry or hurt. So that level of emotional intelligence is about recognizing those feelings as not being what you really want to have. And thank you for sharing your story that way. That is always helpful for us to have a real-life example of what we're talking about here. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, depression is almost at reaching epidemic levels here in the country right now.
It's
a huge, huge thing. And, you know, people who are depressed often feel bad that they're depressed.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of them are go-getters, and they don't even understand what slipped up on them. I mean, you know, we have one of Dr. Reggie's clients, extremely bright person. He fell into that depression. It slipped up on him. He didn't know what had hit him.
Mm-hmm.
So it is huge, absolutely huge problem. And I don't know if there's anyone else on the line that has had a challenge with depression. If they would like to share with us, you can press 1 on your telephone keypad.
And one other thing that I didn't see went over another line in there that I'll go back over, but one other thing I didn't see is what part genetics plays in depression, because for so long we've been taught, well, if your mom or dad or relative has any particular disease, then you're predisposed to that same thing. So I'm the next time we have Kaylee on, I'm actually going to ask her to elaborate a little bit more if that genetic is also playing a role. Genetics plays any role in whether or not we're predisposed to things like depression or anger even, or some of these symptoms that she's giving us here, if there's a possibility that genetics at all plays a role in that. So like if you had a really angry parent, you know, that wouldn't be an example of genetic. That would be an example of being exposed to that anger very early on and possibly you taking that anger on. I'm talking about it being in the family, really, for long periods of time. So the next time that we have her on, we will ask that question, and I have written that question down.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to move on to substance abuse and prescription drugs. Now, I'm actually not going to read what, you know, the paragraphs that she has listed here for substance abuse and prescription drugs. I think that everybody gets an idea of what substance abuse is, as well as what prescription drugs are, and how those things can impact you in a negative way. What I do want to move into is the resistance piece in this chapter. That's an area that I think that, you know, that we really need to spend some time with, and I do want to get this chapter completed hopefully today. So substance abuse and prescription drug use are also ways that we mask this inner critic, and we're going on to resistance does not work, okay? So attempting to silence, she talked about this a little bit when she was on the show on Monday, that reading this material, if you just say, okay, I'm just going to shut the inner critic off, that doesn't really work, and that's what she's talking about here in this particular part of the book. All right, so she says attempting to silence the inner critic does not work, because if we use any of the preceding coping strategies, we believe that the inner critic is telling the truth. Imagine that. If we're using any of the things that we've talked about so far in this chapter, and let me just recap what those are really quickly. We have perfectionism, self-righteousness, prejudice, bigotry, sarcasm, worrying, denial and secrecy, anger, disease, depression, substance abuse, and prescription drugs usage. So if we're using any of those ways to mask our inner critic, then we actually believe the critic is telling us the truth. So think about that for a moment. How can we correct something if we believe that we're coming from a truthful place? Right? We can't. We wouldn't even look to correct some of this anger and frustration or worry, because we believe that we're coming from, that we're right, that we're being truthful. So let's read on there. We believe the inner critic is telling the truth, a truth so foul that we must hide it. By hiding our negative beliefs about ourselves, we actually affirm to our subconscious mind that these judgments must be true. Wow. The problem is, when we hide them, we don't question their validity. What if these judgments are wrong? What if we're suffering needlessly? What if we're wrong about these beliefs that hurt us? When we deflect, disguise, or redirect our attention, we actually cause more problems. For example, when we use criticism or worry to solve our problems, we think it can get us something of value. When in reality, we get nothing from it but unhappiness. Recognizing the self-destructiveness of criticism can be a turning point in life. All right? So that's what she's saying about hiding these negative beliefs from ourselves, or thinking that we can just say, oh, you know, I'm just going to turn away from that type of behavior. She's saying when we deflect, disguise, or redirect our attention, we actually cause more problems, okay?
What's the truth principle here that you think that supports this?
The truth principle that supports this particular not resisting, one of them would be the trust and have faith that everything is working out perfectly. Don't resist what is. We're simply acknowledging what is and shedding that light on it. So that would be one of the principles that I would say is to believe.
Okay,
to believe
so,
that.
So mm-hmm. here, let me just interject. Here
yeah.
it is that we're teaching, number one, mm-hmm. that our magic wand, we're always creating our reality, right? We
mm-hmm.
create our reality from what? Our thoughts and our words and our actions.
Yes.
But we teach that your magic wand are your thoughts and your words. And so here she gives a perfect example. When we use criticism which begins with a thought and then we express it verbally, mm-hmm. or when we use worry to solve our problems, we think that it can get us something of value. The bottom line is that it's going to create whatever you're criticizing about, whatever you're worrying about, is going to manifest in your reality.
Yes.
So the point is, and she says, and you're ending up with nothing but unhappiness, because the negative side of worry and criticism, 9 times out of 10, when we're worrying, we're not painting beautiful pictures of things that could happen to us. We're painting negative pictures of things that happen to us. So she's saying resistance to the truth, to the truth, doesn't work. Because you're going to stay in this thought pattern of criticism or worry or any of the other symptoms that she has, and those will continue to create this experience of unhappiness because you're not allowing yourself to really fully experience you as who you really are, which is that divine energy of God expressing through you. Does that make sense?
It does, and that was well said. Yes, absolutely. That's a good way to tie the universal principles that we study here into what we're talking about in this book. But so, yes, that makes absolutely perfect sense there.
And then she goes on to say, because what we resist persists. In
yes.
other words, the longer we focus on these negative feelings, these negative emotions, these, and that we're covering up the beauty of who we really are, we're going to continue creating the mess. And if we look at where we have the journey that we've taken through oneness, we understand that these dramas come up. These dramas come up in our life so that we can grow from them. Mm-hmm. And what Kaylee is brilliantly doing is showing us, look, first recognize this inner critic. First recognize this symptom that you have that's covering up the beauty of who you are. And you can resolve the drama in your life right there. Recognizing, number one, that you are whole, you are divine. That's number one.
Yes.
You are perfect. You are not damaged goods. I don't want to say what you're not. You're divine.
Mm-hmm.
You are perfect. Just the way you are. But you've got to recognize it. Let the negative stuff go. Let the negative stuff go. Early on when we first started this journey, I said, think happy thoughts. And Gloria was saying, it's not that simple. It's not that simple.
That's right. That's right.
But you know what? Simplicity is genius. If we
it
make
is.
It that simple, mm-hmm. it becomes a little easier for us to move into this truth, the truth principles that Kaylee is sharing with us. All
mm-hmm.
right, so let's go on to how she breaks down resistance. And the reason I'm really wanting to bring this up is because we have a special definition here on Circles of Prosperity of what love is. And we'll talk about that after you go through resistance. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So when she was here on Monday, she talked to us a little bit about what life was like for her as she was coming up, that she had dealt with a lot of criticism. So she titles this section, What We Resist Persists. Now I'm going to jump down to the area where she really starts to tell a story about her own resistance, okay? So I'm going to pick up here where it says, okay, that revelation filled me. I realized that I was just like my parents, and I hated how critical they were. This was not the kind of person I wanted to be. Being critical did not feel good, no matter which person I was judging, regardless of the target. I was the one who had to live with the negativity. I decided to take the direct approach and silence my inner critic. And I would simply stop being critical. I would go cold turkey and kick this nasty habit. I wanted to be free of it once for all. So there she's talking about, you know, earlier we said that it doesn't work to just say, let's get away from this, just drop the inner critic off, and now we're going to learn why that doesn't work. So she goes on to say, I firmly resolved not to be critical any longer. But the harder I tried not to criticize, the more critical I became. And there we go with what you resist persists, okay? So she's going on here to say, not only was I still critical, but I was also critical of myself for being critical. It became a nightmare as the intensity of my criticisms increased. The end result? I was still critical and judging myself to be a failure as well because I wasn't accomplishing my goal. It reminded me of the time I tried to stop smoking, and all I could think about was how much I wanted a cigarette. I had failed at that, too. My negative emotions were spinning out of control. Without realizing it, I was giving power to criticism by focusing on it as an object of scorn and rejection. There is an old saying, whatever you resist persists. I was finding out how true that really is, but I did not know what else to do. I felt like I was drowning in a sea of critical thoughts that bombarded my mind. There was a pretty tyrant, and it lived outside of me. One day, a wise friend said to me, Kaylee, if you don't want to be critical, what do you want to be? I knew I did not want it, but I had never thought about what I wanted to replace it with. The idea of being the change I wanted to see was foreign to me. What did I want to be? After thinking about it for only a moment, I happily replied, I want to be loving, accepting person. My friend told me that it is impossible to admire a quality in someone else that we don't already possess within ourselves. Even if we aren't expressing it in it or have it fully developed, qualities we value the most are actually qualities that accurately express our true nature.
Wow.
Yes, we have a basic need to be ourselves and quite often only recognize our own valuable qualities in others.
Mm.
Okay, yeah, we're going to pause right there and unpack that a little bit. So let's see. She's saying that expressing it fully, qualities we value the most are actually qualities that accurately express our true nature. So when we look out at the world and we admire others, the reason why we're admiring that other person for whatever characteristic that they have, like I'll give you a perfect example. I admire Cynthia's honesty. I admire her straightforwardness. So the reason why I'm admiring that in her is because it's in me. You know, because I'm recognizing that as a trait I wouldn't recognize it in her if it were not in me, okay? So it's the same with all of those other symptoms that we talked about. So if you're recognizing all of those symptoms in somebody else, it's because it's in you, you know? Cynthia, you want to comment there
I think you've said it perfectly. And here's the thing. There's always no judgment. That principle works she's pointing it to it as admiring a quality, but that principle works even if it's not admiration. I think even if you look at another person and you're criticizing them for something, there's something inside of you that it is a reflection of within you.
Yes.
I think it goes both ways. It's a double-edged sword, if you will.
Yes, I agree with that. The other thing that's really important about what she said in this section that I wanted to touch on is that notice when she was speaking to her friend, they said, her friend asked her, you know, she's complaining about not wanting to be critical anymore. So her friend asked her, what is it that you do want? So that was something that Cynthia was talking about right before we got off into this section. So to just say, I don't want to be critical anymore, I don't want to be angry anymore, I don't want to be worrying anymore, that's resistance. So if you're resisting in that way, you will become more angry, more critical, more whatever it is you're trying to move away from. What she's saying here in this book is that we have to replace that what we don't want with what we do want.
Yes.
That's the way that we move away from the anger. So if I don't want to be angry, well, she gave the example here, is that she wanted to be a loving and accepting person, not a critical person. So that's giving her something to now focus on being loving and loving and accepting, and not focusing her attention on not being critical. So
and
you see how that works?
Yes, because what we focus on expands.
Yes.
What we focus on expands.
Yes.
And you know, we can show some very simple things, because how many of us have tried to be on a diet and
mm-hmm.
we're focusing on food, right? But we never focus on, oh, I get to have this and this and this, and it's going to nourish my body. We don't focus on what the guidelines are in the diet. We're
mm-hmm.
focusing on, I can't have this. I can't have this.
Right, right.
I can't eat this.
And that makes us want it more, right?
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. And that is very, very true what she's saying there. So we have to begin to find ways to replace that. Another way of looking at that and saying that, you know, we have that the saying that's easy to remember, that what you resist persists.
Mm-hmm.
Also, where your attention goes, your energy flows. So
yes.
Whatever you're putting your attention on at any given moment, you're valuable and you're most, in my opinion, one of the most valuable assets we have is our attention. Because whatever we put that attention on, our energy is going to flow right behind it. So it's the same as what you resist persists. Also, whatever your energy goes, your attention goes, your energy is going to follow right behind your attention.
Right. Listen, we have Susie on the line, and she wanted to share something. Susie, just very briefly, I know you wanted to share something with the audience. Go ahead.
Sure. It seems as though we're always getting messages that we have to change something or heal something or progress with something in our lives before something else opens up for us. And so that sometimes can give us a feeling of that we're not perfect and that we're constantly working on something.
Mm.
Can you relate to that?
I definitely can relate to that, Susie. You know, and this is one of the reasons why during this, as we're going through this book, that I try to interject that you are perfect, you are divine, and that all of this, really, if you can just shift into the awareness of how beautiful you really are, how perfectly designed you really are, you can release some of these symptoms that are occurring very, very easily. There's that you want to fix. So go ahead, Gloria.
No, I just wanted to comment on that as well. And it's piggybacking on what you just said there. We're perfect. We're innocent. We're the work that we're doing, or the energy that we're spending is to just reveal who we really are underneath all of this stuff. You know, so it's not really about healing or fixing anything. It's about being aware of who you are, what your strengths are, also what your weaknesses are. Because, again, just like she pointed out in this book today, that, you know, we're going to recognize these qualities in others. So if I'm coming from a place of pure criticalness, guess what I'm going to attract to myself all the time? It's critical people, critical situations. So it's about clearing out some of this that's going on so that we can create that better life for ourselves. So I just want to reiterate that at the core of who we are is perfect, in every way, divine in every way, and it produces light for us.
Yes, well,
our goal is to get from get that stuff out of the way.
Okay. I know that you have this perfect goal in mind of finishing chapter one, but we're going to go ahead and go into our closing prayer.
Yes.
Tomorrow is Valentine's Day, so we want to spend a little time talking about love, for sure.
Yes, yes,
tomorrow. So ask Dr. Richie to take us into our closing prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for who we are. We are born in divine perfection. We are souls having a body. in this dimension. And I thank you that we are perfect. We are the one dozen beautiful roses, divine petals, stems, everything that we are. Sometimes they're thorns. And we have to learn to accept who we are as a part of our being, but love every aspect, every critical element of who we are, and not to criticize or judge or label any of the aspects of who we are. It's a part of growing in perfection and divine love. Thank you, God, for this lesson. Thank you for Gloria presenting this lesson. Thank you for the author, and thank you for the broadcast. And everyone who listens, receive a divine blessing of who they really are. Thank you, God. We move into the power of the Holy Spirit. We believe it is so, and so it is.
And so it is.